Cheers.
Cheers.
And welcome to the next episode of ABA on Tap. I am Mike Rubio, once again with my esteemed co-host Dan Lowry. Dan, how you doing?
Doing great. Very refreshed after the first episode.
Yeah, good to get some good response, some positive response, even from some people that we don't know, which I guess inspires us enough to try again. So we're back with another idea to brew up, another, I guess, theme that I think people will be very familiar with in our field, something that I know I still see in use every day and then makes me cringe a little bit. But I want to take some time to explore this general topic of verbal and vocal behavior and gestures. And we're going to kind of sum it up with this idea of, Dan?
Everyone's favorite sign, and that's more. Can't have ABA without more. So let's talk about more, Mike. Let's
no
talk about
more, the, more.
A lot more, more. Let's talk about the origins of more.
Man.
Let me pass it to you. What do you think? Because I have some ideas, but let me pass it to you first. What do you think more? What was the origins of more?
I'm going to have to blame it on, and I use that word loosely, I'm not trying to be disparaging, but I'm going to blame it on the idea of baby signs, which I probably first heard of around 2000, 2001, and it was this big trend, this big wave. I know we kind of looked at some quick things online here before trying to record, and yeah, you know, what I remember learning about that is it was just this quick, exciting way to get your kid to communicate using these recognizable or variations of American sign language signs. And I just took...
Must have been a small book if it was just more, if that was the only sign in the book.
Well, apparently that's the only one that took.
Baby signs, one page, order on Amazon.
It was a pamphlet. No, there were many more signs, and I mean, there was a science behind this, and that's why, again, I know that you and I, you know, as we develop this more, maybe we'll do a lot more research and prep, but we also want to make sure that this is kind of a casual conversation to highlight those things that are in practice, and we're not even sure why anymore. They're just these mainstays that, in some cases, we might be applying inappropriately or incorrectly or something that we've just been dragging along because, you know, it's made our repertoire and nobody's thought to clean it out. So, yeah, this idea that your kid's not saying anything, they have a language delay, you come in, you've got, you know, a little bowl of goldfish, and as you prompt them to put their little fists together, their little bunch of fingers together, then they get another one, and before you know it, yeah, the kiddo is able to repeat that, and it's very, very exciting. You have a child that wasn't otherwise communicating with a very quick and simple ABA procedure that speech therapists were using and that we were definitely using and are still using. Now a kiddo is able to communicate. It's very exciting, right? So why am I so skeptical? Well, we'll get into that. I'll pass it over to you, and what are your impressions of how we use that? It's one of many examples I know that you and I tend to discuss about, you know, why do we still do this and what's the logic, if there is any. Yeah, what are your impressions of more?
Well, if I had to put my money on it, I think the original premise of more is that it's pretty universal and generalizable. There can be more, a lot of things. There can be more swing, more goldfish, as you said, more access to mom, more iPad. And so I think that the fact that that could be utilized so often gave the ability to run tons and tons of more trials and tons of more trials and more trials and more. So eventually you were able to see some progress because that child was probably inundated into hundreds or thousands of trials of more. But the question is, okay, though, so the child, let's say the child picks up or the individual picks up the more sign. Then you run into the issue is the kid's just signing, the individual's just signing more for everything. And what do they want more of? That's where the issue is, the discrimination. What's that next step? How do we get more goldfish? How do we get more mom? How do we expand on this sign so we don't just have an individual just saying more to everything so we don't understand?
Well, yeah, that is, I guess, the $60,000 question here. And I think that's where my skepticism comes in, or my idea that it's a premise that we've beaten to death. And it's kind of like, you know, when you go buy a car and they show you the stereo. Yeah, that's great. You want a nice stereo in your car. But it's, I mean, it's really, really a minimal feature of the whole function of what we can do. And again, I don't want to downplay the excitement, but I think you highlight the notion of the need for expansion immediately. So I think when you were starting your examples, you used my favorite, which is something like more swing. Now, if we think about that from a grammatical perspective, we're actually not modeling a very good phrase there, right? You want to swing again, might be something. So can we differentiate that sign? I think the answer is yes, but somehow we get stuck because we're excited on the fact that there's, maybe that's my premise. We're excited, parents are excited, now more becomes overgeneralized in many cases in my experience, as opposed to expanding, as opposed to now being discriminated against another symbol of recurrence, like again. And then further, something you allude to very naturally in your description is this idea that, well, if you're going to say more, then how are we going to highlight that second word so that we're always moving toward that progression of one to two to three to then however many you can fit in a grammatical sentence. And if we start pointing, so more and then pointing to something else, I would beg the question, why did we need more in the first place? If pointing or a million other universal, not just ASL gestures, are now maybe as effective. Again, and I'm not trying to downplay the effective or the use of the initial more sign, just how maybe we tend to get stuck on it.
So you're saying it might actually be more informative and more beneficial to both parties if the individual that's struggling with vocal language points to, say, the goldfish, that will lend more discriminative information to the listener than just a random sign of more. That absolutely seems... And with pointing, while it's not vocal, you can still get kids that are non-vocal, and you can still get tons of trials, right? Because you've got only one behavior, and you're pointing. Whenever you point to something, you receive that, so you still have that contiguity between behavior and reinforcement, and you can run the trials. Which, again, I think is where more came from, is how do we get a lot of trials? Because you've got this young child, presumably, if we're talking about ASD specifically, who's, some people would say nonverbal, but Skinner would argue that, you know, verbal behavior is any behavior reinforced by another. So, you know, he's engaging in non-vocal behaviors like falling to the floor and crying and things like that. And what the parents are trying to figure out is, how do I get some adaptive behavior? We'll look at crying as not adaptive for the sake of this argument. We can address that later.
Mm-hmm.
Some adaptive behavior so that we can reinforce. We need some behavior so that we can reinforce. And if he wants goldfish and I haven't run 50 trials of goldfish, he's not going to know what that is. So if I can get more, that's some adaptive behavior that we can get. But I think you alluded to a great point there. If maybe we're looking for generalized adaptive behavior, maybe a point will lend a lot more information. Because if a kid points to the swing, I don't know how the word more gives me any more information, because I know that he wants the swing, or the goldfish, or the water, or whatever the kid wants. The word more doesn't really give any more information.
Well, And in assigning the sign more, what is the directionality of that sign? Usually we're creating the context within which you will receive more of some object of more. Goldfish or whatever it is, or swing in some, you know, incorrect, grammatically incorrect use of the word. So in that sense, there's no... It's hard to confirm the joint attention in that sense. You're just forcing it in. You assume that there's a desire for primary reinforcement in these goldfish, and then we prompt the sign through where maybe, just to put this question out there, it could be more effective to do something that that is in our repertoire, which is provide two options out of reach, a good distance between the two options so that you can distinguish their scanning, their eye gaze, and then reaching. Is reaching a much more developmentally appropriate and feasible behavior than prompting through more.
So you're going to require a lot less physical prompting.
And why would that be beneficial? So here we start asking the question that I think you and I have been inching towards and now kind of racing towards, which is how to open up the stimuli, how to expand what it is we've taught almost, you know, in a very unified, very singular, very linear manner. So you make a very strong point. We're almost, to use this phrase very loosely, we're a victim of our own successful procedures. We know that repetition is successful, yes, in learning, that it's essential to learning. But then suddenly, a pretty stringent mastery criteria, like 80% of opportunities across 10 days.
Have you been reading my reports?
I've been reading everybody's reports for many years, and IEPs and whatever. You know, it begs the question, does that lead to some form of satiety, if not also overgeneralization and stunted learning? Because, you know, we're not actively thinking about how to go beyond this idea of more. So, I you know, admittedly, on a day-to-day basis, I don't see it a lot out in the field, but it still comes up. It's this favorite of a lot of our younger professionals. And knowing, you know, how long I've been in the field and that it's just this dynasty, this like fossil carryover, you know, that again begs a lot of these questions. Does it make a lot of sense? And we're poking some good holes here, and I use that respectfully because we have to remember there is an initial value, and you keep highlighting that. The question, the real discussion we want to have here and we want to end up with some ideas about is, how do we expand this? How do we make it more useful beyond the one word that it represents?
I agree, and I do think it's interesting if you look at a communication modality maybe more directed to ASD specifically, like the PECS program, which I think I'm a pretty big fan of, is they don't even start with more and stuff like that. They start with just the labels of whatever the object is, so they're starting with the nouns, which seems to make a lot more sense to inundate an individual with nouns. Again, it's for presumably non-vocal individuals, but they're still teaching them based on the noun and the object, not just the generic more, open, all done. Can tell you how many clients I've had that you teach them those three signs, more, open, all done. Number one, that pretty much encompasses everything in their life, so no really need to expand upon those three words. If you can say those three words, you can get anything, you can remove anything from your environment, and especially with ASL, if they just scroll through those three signs, well, darn near anything in my environment is going to be accessible or removed, so I'm good to go. So PECS, I think, is interesting. I'm just looking at it from an augmentative and alternative communication standpoint. And that they're teaching from nouns, which I do think is an interesting premise and seems to be more of a typical vocal premise as well, as to teach from nouns than this teach from more and generalize that.
Well, you're starting with the idea of an expansive lexicon from the very beginning. So I think that there is a great deal of value in how PECS, and again, I'm often accused of not liking PECS. I defend myself by saying I know that I don't fully understand the procedures, the way they're written. They're very exact. But again, it starts with a very good premise in the notion of an expanded lexicon, kind of tying in some of our knowledge with discrete trial statistics and trying to ensure that or verify that the child's discriminating between the picture cards and so forth. So yeah, in that sense, where a sign, somebody could stick it into a client's face, into their line of sight. With PECS now, you've got this open hand cue. You've got a little bit more joint attention built into it. So I'm gonna give that a better grade right away in the increased lexicon.
Get you over to the PECS team.
I was never on the PECS. No, so honestly, excuse me. The increased lexicon and the joint attention engagement. Right, I need to get your attention, not again. Oftentimes, the way we teach signs is because we're excited, and I get the point, the kiddo does it, and bam, we're there to reinforce. If we could use that same kind of vigor now with reaching, picture card exchange, whatever that is, yeah, I think we're accessing a greater lexicon and the same kind of repetitive rigor that has ensured our success in terms of learning theory or treatment of autism. So,
I definitely agree with that. I think if we look at language, language just communicates an idea, and it's hard. So this concept of more, right? Say the kid wants more goldfish. Well, are goldfish goldfish or goldfish more? Because he has no idea what that are. Or swing more. Is everything more? Is there one noun and everything is labeled the word more? It doesn't, you kind of run into a wall there because they're never going to, well, not never. It's going to be difficult to then generalize, hey, this goldfish, which I was told for a year is the word more, is actually goldfish. And the swing is a swing. It's not more. That's a difficult transition to make.
I never thought of it that way. And when we think about another kind of common misnomer, the idea of a tact or a label, developmentally speaking, the idea of one word communication oftentimes can serve as a mand or a tact despite it being a noun. And what we're doing here,
based on how the listener responds,
or intonation, inflection,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we're doing is absolutely right. We're overgeneralizing the use of a single word label that's an adjective. It's a quantifier. That developmentally makes, in my humble opinion, zero sense.
Absolutely.
And we're limiting the target pool. So now we're taking a what's supposed to be an enriched environment for any child, whether we're talking about some sort of impoverished situation or, in our case, maybe a lack of taking in more cues, and instead of gaining their attention and giving them an enriched environment, we've now limited to an overgeneralized singular target with a grammatical dysfunction and inappropriateness. In this case, from a developmental perspective, we should be teaching all sorts of labels. Another thing that maybe fits into this, and we won't discuss much now, is numbers and colors as singular targets. You know, they're also quantifiers and adjectives.
Oh, wait, so you can specify how much more with a number? It's not just more?
But
you could have said
exactly,
three more,
well,
four more?
You get my point. So we won't, again, I think that a lot of, you get one little kernel of confusion and it spreads into these other things. And suddenly, we're not really honoring the power of ABA in the sense that it levels the playing field. It's just the same learning procedures, the same learning circumstances apply to our clients as do to us in learning our times tables in third grade, but we're maybe we're failing to recognize a lot of these premises as we do our day-to-day work. So again, do I think there's a place for more as a sign? Yes, there is. I would contend in our discussion here, and I don't want to be unkind, but I would contend that I would be hard-pressed to start with it. And I am hard-pressed to allow for that to continue in our practice because it there's so many holes in it.
It seems very, very counterintuitive to start with the adjective. I don't know of any language that really starts just by teaching the adjective. It's also like starting with the concept of all done. All done's kind of a difficult concept to teach because once a kid does it, then nothing necessarily happens in their environment. Maybe something moves, but the person moves away from them. But other than that, they're not like getting access to something, so that contiguity is more distant there. It's like the concept of working out. Like, you might have a totally different mental picture of what I have. So these more, the less concrete we are off the beginning with getting away from nouns, I feel like makes it more abstract
concrete.
On what you're trying to communicate to a kid more. And then that gets overgeneralized. And as you talk about language mapping, as you're exploring with your younger clientele and hopefully transgressing that into all clientele over time, language mapping is going to be really difficult to do if we're just focusing on more. Right? So you're trying to label, as I say, channel your inner Morgan Freeman throughout
mm-hmm.
the kid's life as you label everything with the premise that our individuals that we work with ASD, the receptive understanding is much higher than the receptive understanding. So they're understanding a lot of these premises, but they're not expressing them back. So it's, again, I'm using this word contiguity because I think it's so important, or latency is probably a better term in this respect, that we say a word, and then they repeat that word later, and that justifies to us that they understood and know what that word means. Hence why one of the reasons that the ASD could be increasing, and I'm digressing just a little bit, is the individuals that were used to be diagnosed with mental retardation or intellectual disability now being diagnosed with autism. Why? Because you don't know what someone knows unless they can communicate it to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we run into with a lot of our kids, is that they might know things, but they can't communicate it. So if we're going to take that understanding, we should probably inundate them with as many languages, as many nouns, and as much language as possible, expanding from just more, so that when that expressive language starts to catch up with the receptive language, we've already done a ton of teaching. We don't have to start all over and teach all the nouns now at the age of 5. We've taught them since the age of 2. The language just hasn't come out yet. But when the language comes out, they've already been inundated with more car, more swing, more, or swing again, as you say, the more proper way of saying
to be a stickler, right?
To be a stickler.
Right. So what does the future hold for us? How do we, what do I do next time I go out in the field and I see this happen? I can tell you what I do now. I kind of cringe a little bit inside, and then I smile a little bit outside to make sure that nobody can tell I'm cringing on the inside. And then I try to remind them that we can expand it. So what is it more of? I try to remind our younger pros to make sure they've got the gaze shifting or the line of sight, that something's making sense here, that we're not just counting on the back end prompt to teach, that we're giving a very enriched environment otherwise to try and teach some discrimination. I try to remind them about the lack of grammaticality with, you know, something like more swing. What does the future hold for us? Where do we go with this?
Well, I think going from kind of top down, number one, if they're vocalizing, if they're using words, then we just work on expanding the words away from more. I don't think that's predominantly who we run into with the overgeneralization of more isn't too much kids that are vocal. It's more kids that are non-vocal and are overgeneralizing this more sign specifically. So I think number one is going back to the engagement piece and how do we get them engaged, because I can't tell you how often I see this sign more. A kid will just sign it, not looking at anything, not really engaged, and they'll just literally sign it in their own little bubble, staring at the wall, and then all of a sudden the parent will come from wherever with 15 different things. Oh, you meant more Oreo, you meant more Goldfish, you meant more iPad, and there was no even intent or joint attention in that communication piece. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question as you posed it, but I think number one is figuring out what the motivation is so we can get some intent with communication. And then once we have that intent, assuming that it's a non-vocal client, maybe just focusing on the point. And sure, you can have more, or you can just work on pointing to different things. And then as individuals progress, maybe looking into pecs if they're never going to be vocal, or expanding the sign from more to more what, whatever else.
Okay, that's a... what are their scenarios to create? So I guess one question I could ask is, you know, knowing that I've got an affinity and a really strong focus right now on early start and 0 to 3, how does a 2-year-old tell you they want more?
Typically developing 2-year-old, or
to use that phrasing right. So, or actually any 2-year-old, even thinking about one of our clients who might have some stereotypy, might have some repetitive behavior. You know, what does that behavior mean, and what can we do about that? Because I think that a lot of times we try to intervene and use something that's got this loose meaning, you know, like more. But it's really contradictory to what the child's naturally doing. So how does a child that's 2 tell you they don't want something normally?
Fall to the floor and cry?
Walk away. Maybe they push it away. And oftentimes,
rip it up, throw it off the table.
And oftentimes, what do I see a lot of our responses?
Well, you have to block.
Or that gets taken to some undesired behavior.
Because if you don't block, then you've lost control over the session.
Well, and the idea is that, well, now this is the autism, right? This is why this kid is knocking his food off the high chair.
Correct. Some random person showed up at my house and told me to do something, and now they're... We would call that protesting, and that's the autism.
Right. Excuse me. So I think in that sense we have to, and you talk a lot about this, you know, we offer something to a child and they push it away, and we don't take that as no, right? But we'll feel very comfortable on the other end in prompting that they're, you know, to, on their little elbows to make them do this little Morse sign and, you know, give them, deliver something that they may or may not be super interested in the first place. But, you know, with any kid eating goldfish or snacking on a few, of course that's reinforcement. And now we're back into this cycle of imposing, of, you know, what some people now accuse of masking, things that we're imposing that have social significance, but we may not be following the regular cues. Now, a lot of our clients, even younger ones, will show very idiosyncratic behavior, things that seem like an anomaly to us. And I think that more is an example of one example of many things we do to try to normalize or typify when maybe we start taking the natural cues. If this kid walks away from something, they're done. They're not interested. It's a 2-year-old. If you get them to stand and look at something repetitively, that means they want more, or they want you to do it again. And cultivating from those cues as opposed to doing a lot of what we've done in working from the consequence end. Now, I can't blame us on that. We talked about this in our first episode. It's what worked. It was our bread and butter. It's what was proven. But as we expand our toolbox, looking a lot more at the antecedents and the behaviors that we do have available to us and what they communicate, and as long as they're within reason, who cares if they look idiosyncratic or weird, to, you know, to use that term respectfully. What are they communicating? Are they safe? Okay, as long as it's safe, what is it communicating? So you're moving around a lot. That means I've got to be moving around with you a lot. That means you need more. You need more stimulus. You need this one and that one and that one, and you need to move quickly. But instead, we try to kind of, capture or corral and then impose these singular targets across many, many domains, which in and of themselves may not amount to an enriched environment. So, yeah, what, you know, for me then, I would counter the joint attention pieces, the pointing, the gaze shift, the reaching, the tapping, the shifting gaze from a person's face to the object back to the person's face as they use the point proximally, distally, bringing objects to the parent. So practicing those things, the proto-declarative, the proto-imperative, to use those fancy words, which we'll get into, I'm sure, at another discussion when we explore joint attention more closely. But, you know, coming in with a new shiny item, several new shiny items, they don't have to be fancy. Kids get engaged by the simplest things. As we all know from holiday presents or birthday presents being opened and kids paying attention to the wrapping more. But instead, we overreach, and we should be coming in with anything that can be engaging and practicing. You know, take this over to your mom, take this over to your dad, let's show them, let's have them comment on that, let's have them shift your gaze from the object to your face and show you something and create a sense of it, joint attention, but more importantly, a sense of wonderment, a sense of enrichment. I can show you things around you that are interesting. I think, I know we were recently enjoying a little lunch together, and I showed you my lodestones, my little magnets, and kind of rolled one out, and then as soon as you touched it, I rolled the other one out, and you chuckled, you know. Yeah, immediately awesome. you were like, oh my god, this thing is a magnet, and I didn't think it was, and it's a shiny rock, and
absolutely,
and again, it, you know, it's a really stupid, simple example I'm giving, but that created a sense of wonderment there, where the child was naturally telling me he wanted me to more of the magnets. He wanted me to do it again, because I would give all the magnets, and he'd have them all in his hand, and he would hand them over to me. What does that mean? Do this again, man.
Yep.
Do this again.
Yep.
Okay? And then we did that for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, literally counting, clicking. He was rolling them back to me now. And then he left and went to a different activity. What was he communicating at that point?
He was all done.
And did I have to stop him and prompt him to give me the sign? Or could I just go, oh, you're all done with this? Where are we going next? So I even introduced the concept of next in my model, as opposed to, no, just come here, to perpetuate some repetitive trials and make you say more, even though, again, in this example, it should be do this again, because more doesn't quite fit syntactically or grammatically or in any way that I can make sense of. So it'd be interesting, as we get more people listening to this, to get a speech therapist or, you know, any speech therapist out there, speech language pathologist, that wants to help explain this to us, because I know it seems to be common practice with them, too, and they might have, you know, some insight that we're lacking, and they often do, in their own content expertise. So just to kind of, we're wrapping up our time here. We want to keep these things brief and informative and not too long. Our pilot episode was long for a reason, but And wrapping up, Dan, what do you want to assert here? What's your closing point?
There's so much more than more. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like how you said it. You said the 2-3-year-old wants more everything. That's our job, is to provide more. And how are we ever going to know what they want more of if we're not having them differentiate? Because they want infinite more. So.
And again, so then I might add, just to sum up, we've gone over a lot of information here, but I would add there's a lot of natural gestures and joint attention cues that, in my opinion, may be more useful. In addition to what you're saying, which is very wise, the single word label and the enrichment, the lexicon of nouns, needs to be part of it. So how we now expand on that to ensure that we're also using the natural gestures and behaviors of them leaving the activity, giving the items back to you to ask for you to do things again or more of something. A lot of natural, not ASL signs, non-ASL signs that we could take advantage of before we impose our idea of intervention. So it's been great talking with everybody again. Thank you for joining us. We're really, really happy this is catching a little bit of a fire, a little bit of momentum. So we appreciate your time and lending you this information. Dan, any closing words?
Cheers.
Thanks a lot. Always analyze responsibly. Take care.